Okay. I'm ready if you're ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a quick...
Happy...
Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I really fucked that up.
This is What Now with Trevor Noah. This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu. This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today. Happy Nick Kyrgios Day, everybody.
Happy Nick Kyrgios Day.
And you know, I was thinking about this. I was thinking about how sports have a personality. The sport is the way it is. And for a long time, that's how the sport sees itself. So tennis is a perfect example, right? You have a sport where initially it was very calm, very rich English people wearing white clothes, and they would hit the ball to each other and they would politely clap. Bravo, Michael. Bravo. Bravo. Great job. And in every sport, there's always somebody who comes along who shakes things up. It's not just like who they are, but it's how they play. It's how the game sees them. It's how they see the game. You know, I think of it in golf, it was Tiger Woods, obviously. You know, I remember the furore. Do you remember how crazy people got when Tiger Woods did the fist pump after he won? Like people, I remember that being a scandal in golf. People were like, is that for golf? Should that be something that people do in golf? I don't know if he should be, this guy is, they made it seem like Tiger Woods like did a drive-by shooting on the golf course.
I know nothing about golf, and that is absolutely burned into my brain, that image of him. And I know nothing about that sport.
And that's why he's so important to the sport, because Tiger Woods basically brought, I mean, just, let's put it this way. He brought a relative amount of swag to the game of golf. He's super swaggy for golf. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And I think every sport has that person. They come in and everyone who's like traditionalist, you know, complains about the person who comes in because of what they do. But Nick Kyrgios is that player in tennis. Mm. If you hate tennis or if you think it's boring, you love Nick Kyrgios. And if you love tennis, then you'll have an opinion on Nick Kyrgios. Because this kid came into the game, and I say kid purposefully, because when Nick Kyrgios started playing tennis, he came in as a teenager. No one expected anything from him. He was playing in Australia. He didn't even play tennis from like the youngest age. Like people normally start when they're like 2 years old. Nick didn't really do that. He didn't really focus on the game in the same way. He comes in, he's playing against Rafael Nadal, one of the greatest of all time, at one of the biggest tournaments ever. He beats him, and everyone in the world is like, wait, who's this kid? And then he just proceeds to like play the game the way nobody has ever played it. I mean, like, he like hits the ball behind his back. He hits it through his legs. He'll like, and then also he's got a lot of personality. You know, I he reminds me in many ways of John McEnroe, but less rude. I know that sounds like a crazy thing to say about John McEnroe, and I liked him for that. But like John McEnroe had that like, your mother, you goddamn, you know what I mean? Which I loved. But Nick is just like, he's an emotional player who's changing the sport. And one of the biggest things he's changing in the sport is the fact that he seems to not care. Hmm. He plays tennis and then he goes home. he has almost no passion for it, which really pisses people off, by the way. There's a lot of people who are like, you should be grateful, young man, for having... And he's just like, nope, it's my job. And that's it.
All you have to do is appreciate a good villain. He's not a villain, but like in the game of tennis, there are heroes or people that are like held to that standard. And then Nick comes in and people can't deal with it. And I live for it. Live for it.
He's amazing. He's amazing. Can I tell you what makes Nick so amazing, in my opinion, is that like any great villain that is written into a story, you actually come to find that they're not the quote unquote bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like I often think whenever I'm watching a movie or I'm reading a really well-written story, there's a moment in the story where you go, oh, wait, is this the villain? And I think in many ways, Nick Kyrgios is painted as the villain. But the more you get to know him, his life, and the sport, you're like, huh, maybe tennis is the villain.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's kind of like how Disney recently has been reframing villains. Like Maleficent gets her own story and you realize, hey, she had a reason to spurn that little baby in the bassinet.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick has his reasons for, you know, making people clutch their pearls at the US Open.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm really, really fascinated to speak to him because one, he's a maverick in tennis. Two, he's one of the most genuine people you'll ever have a conversation with. And three, I think the sport needs him if it hopes to survive what is going to be one of its biggest transitions from the legends like Roger Federer and, you know, Nadal and, you know, Djokovic and all of these legends. As they slowly age out of the game, there's only going to be one name that gets new people in to watch tennis, and it's going to be Nick Kyrgios. So I'm really excited. I don't even want to waste more of your time. Let's jump into it. Nick Kyrgios. Nick Kyrgios, what's going on, my dude?
Nothing much. Just touched down back in Australia and spending time with some my fam. Haven't seen them in a little bit, and yeah, just chilling.
You've been watching the NBA playoffs? Well, not the playoffs. It's weird. In-season tournament. You've been watching it?
Yeah, loved it. Yeah, watched it. Thought it was a great idea. Great idea for the league.
It's funny. I saw like Kevin Durant. He said he hated the idea when he first saw it come out. And then even after he lost, he was like, this was the most exciting tournament they've played in a long time.
Yeah, that tends to be how it is. I mean, athletes, we get pretty stuck in our ways. So we don't like change. And then I guess, you know, when it actually benefits the league, that we find out. And it was a good idea, I think.
Who's your team in the NBA? Because I know you've been a huge
Boston,
fan for a long time.
Yeah,
I'm
a big big Boston guy. Like,
why Boston?
Watch every single game. Don't know. I just in 2005 picked up my first video game and picked the Boston Celtics. Ever since then, just been a religious fan.
It's always interesting seeing how people become a fan of a team. You know, I think I became a fan of many individual players in football because of like you know, European football, soccer, because of video games like playing FIFA.
Yeah.
And then what are you playing right now? You said you video you, you game
Call of Duty.
Game?
Yeah, Call of Duty, Fortnite, Pokemon, everything. I'm just like I'm obsessed. I'm the biggest.
How good are you?
I'm very good. Yeah,
like very, very good.
Yeah, like we call them sweaties. We're sweats.
Oh
like
wait,
I'm
you're a sweat.
A sweat? I'm a fucking sweat. Yeah.
What's your loadout on Call of Duty?
I'm trying to actually. I'm just gonna move this. I'm gonna show you my PC right now.
Right.
Look at my PC, bro.
Oh, nice. Is that water cooled? What is that?
Yeah, it's like it's
that's
just
beautiful.
Like very over the top. And look, you can see
that's
the
beautiful.
Thing.
Oh,
see
I see. Okay. Yeah.
I'm bowing. Mm-hmm.
You've got the GeForce in there. I like
bro,
that.
Like I just
customized
obsessed,
CPU.
Yeah.
You've got the LEDs.
I see, you
got everything else going.
You're a sweat too, bro. What the hell?
No, I'm not a sweat. I wish I was.
Yeah,
a sweat.
You are.
I just,
you are.
I just
you are.
Love playing.
No, you are, bro. You are.
No,
you got
no,
that
no,
anonymous name online that you like beating them like 12-year-old kids.
Genuinely, I wish I was a sweat. I only started playing Warzone in the pandemic. I've always been like a FIFA player. Warzone's great.
How good
Warzone's
is it?
Great. Yeah, but then once my KD went above 1.1, then it stopped being fun because I got put in lobbies with sweats.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
you.
Sweaty.
And then it's
that's
not funny
so
anymore.
Funny, bro. That's so good.
Yeah, then it's not funny anymore. It's not cool. Now I'm just like, oh no, I want to be in like the. The low
yeah, just
KD.
The normal, not the standard.
Yeah.
Like
0.45 is a good game to be playing. That's like a nice day, you know, a nice adventure.
So funny.
Was there a tennis person you were a fan of when you got into the sport? Because your story is interesting in that, like, It seems like from everything I hear about you, everything I've read about you, it doesn't seem like Nick Kyrgios was that into sport until he got into sport. Is this true or is this just a myth?
Yeah, I didn't really like sport that much growing up. And then I think my mum, you know, eventually saw I was pretty chubby and I wasn't active that much as a kid. And she was kind of like, all right, let's start doing some stuff. She just took me down to the local tennis center and fair to say I hated it. I didn't like tennis at all. And then, you know, I loved basketball, fell in love with basketball.
Yeah.
And then played both. But I didn't really have any role models either growing up, like in the sporting world. Like I didn't really watch that much sport. I was like big into video games, actually took like my studies really seriously. And then, yeah, just had no real role models. And then I kind of fell in love with basketball players now as I was playing tennis and there were two conflicting sports. Right. And obviously I've been absolutely shredded for, you know, my personality or the way I go about things in tennis because it's a very, yeah, you know, in the box type of sport. And mm-hmm, yeah, so mm-hmm. I didn't really have any role models, but yeah, I guess that's been part of the journey. So it's been pretty cool though.
Yeah, it's an interesting journey to go on because like, how does somebody get into a sport? How do they become good at the sport and why that sport? Like, I don't think people understand how unlikely it was for you to get into tennis. You know,
yeah, it was very unlikely.
You were what, 13, 14 when you got into the sport?
I played at seven years old was my seven. when I picked up a racket. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So why
tennis? Did your mom ever say why tennis?
Well, in Australia, tennis is like one of our biggest sports. It's cricket and tennis.
What about Aussie rules? There was no Aussie rules.
Yeah,
for,
I know,
for footy?
But I can't really. No, I can't buy into a sport that's not played out of Australia. I don't know. I think it's a bit of a joke, to be honest. On the record,
who was who was your biggest player back then? I'm trying to think of Australian.
Well, Leighton Hewitt,
stars.
Pat Rafter, like
yeah,
Pat Rafter,
okay,
Leighton
okay.
Hewitt.
Yeah,
we had like a
yes.
pretty rich culture in it, and then like my local tennis center is like literally 2 minutes away, so that was, I guess, it was easy for them, but I absolutely hated it.
What did you hate about the sport? What was the thing you hated most?
I just didn't
most?
Like it. I just didn't feel, I never feel like I could express myself the way I wanted to. And then I realized that I could later on in my career and really like shit stir people.
Right.
Yeah. Just look, I mean, look, I didn't really grow up with like, you know, in a rich family or anything. So I knew mm-hmm, I was mm-hmm. very soon to realize that it was a way to kind of, help my family and help my friends and provide for my people and build a life for like, far beyond myself. So that's when I realized that, you know, that was a kind of journey that I had to kind of do. Because like to say I would make it at NBA, I don't think I would. So it was just an easier route for me, I guess, to make it out.
Did that add a lot of pressure to it though? Like when you're playing a sport that's not just a sport, it's something that supports your family, can lift your yeah. family out of the place they're in. I mean, doesn't that come with an extra amount of pressure that the other kids don't have?
Definitely, I think for sure. But I guess the cool thing about my childhood is I didn't know any different. My mum and dad always made me feel like I had enough and I had the best childhood. Like
that's great.
I didn't
yeah.
know that I was, you know, didn't have a lot. But I got hit with a lot of pressure and expectation early. As soon as I was 17, 18, I kind of broke onto the scene. That's when, uh-huh. I mean, Australia kind of put this, I mean, like the weight on my shoulders for an 18-year-old, I think, you know, to look back at it, I think I did pretty well. We're dealing with it, but it's yeah. not normal for someone that young to deal with the spotlight and the fame and the pressure, especially with social media and all this pressure
right,
that comes
right,
with
right.
it. It's like mental, like people wonder why I am the way I am. I'm like, it's just my experiences of what I went through kind of, you know, made me a bit like my screws are a bit loose, I think.
I always wonder that. I remember talking to some friends about this, about the age we grew up in and then the age that people grow up in now. And I was like, mm-hmm. Do you ever take for granted? You know, I remember when like Justin Bieber was blowing up and I mean, Justin Bieber's obviously a lot younger than me. And, you know, I would think to myself, I go, we're judging this kid, but if you took away his fame, he's a child. Do you know what I mean? It was literally
yes.
like it's news headlines about a child. And I would say to my
yeah,
friends all the time,
strange.
I'd go, do you remember the amount of shit that we would get up to at that age? But there was yeah. There's no journalism. There's no reports are coming after you. You're just yeah. a kid getting up to shit. It's between you, your parents, and maybe the school.
Yeah.
You know, but I can't imagine what it was like for you at that age being seen as not just a professional athlete, but as you say, like a bastion of Australian sport. Like one minute you're just yeah. Nick, and the next thing you know, you know, you're the face of tennis in Australia and quickly in the world, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was, it was hard because I actually was just a normal kid. Like, I was still at school. I had my school friends. I would just be doing normal kid things. And then I would live this alternate life of, like, carrying the burden of Australian sport, trying to win a Grand Slam, playing Federer, playing Nadal. And I'm just like, I didn't really take it very serious. And that's what I kind of got smashed for, was like, oh, you're doing this and you're lucky to do this. And I never saw it as I was lucky to do it. Like, I worked every single day to get to where I was. Yeah. Like, so people are like, oh, you're so extremely blessed to be there, and which I am. Like, I guess I'm not saying, like, a bit of luck was needed to get there as well. But it's not like I just picked my hand in a hat and pulled out, like, oh, like, professional tennis player. Mm-hmm, like, that's why I just can't stand people like, oh, your life must be amazing. Like, it's like, bro, it was like a lot of hard yards to get here. But yeah, it's just like, it was crazy. I just didn't take myself seriously enough. Like, I saw my name on the list of, like, Federer and Nadal, like, these gods of sport, and I just saw my name there. I was just like, what a joke. Like, I was like, it's all a joke.
Were they your heroes growing up, or was it still all basketball for you? It was just you were like in an office. It sounds like to me, it's like you worked at like an accounting firm. It's essentially, you know what I mean? It's like a job.
Yeah, I was just at school. I was just chilling, like, and then I just, like, started beating these players, and then I guess. In a way, it was good, but like, it wasn't good, because then I kind of lost a bit of respect for, like, because people idolize these people. And I was like, I beat them at 18 and 19. I was like, well, anyone can do it then. Like, if I can do it, anyone can do it. And then people like, oh, you should be. And then it was like the rat race of things, like, oh, you should win our Grand Slams, or you should. And I was like, that was never my goal. It was never my intention to go out there and be like Roger. It was like to show people that someone like me from the small town could go out there and compete and beat some of these, like, I mean, gods, in my opinion. Yeah, I think it's hilarious. Yeah.
I remember having a conversation with Roger Federer about you. And it was Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. Bill Gates was hosting a charity tennis tournament in Cape Town in South Africa. And we're just chatting about the whole game. And your name came up. And man, I wish you could see the eyes of the players when they're talking about you. The one thing that Roger kept on saying, which was almost frustrating to him when he said it, was he's like, this kid is effortless. He's like, this guy does. He was like, what Nick does in tennis when he's not trying is what all of us work our asses off to try to do. Do you get that from the other athletes in the sport? Because, I mean, let's forget about the press and everybody for a moment. Like, people write out their asses all the time. Everybody thinks they know a sport from the outside. Everyone has opinions. But I always find if you want some of the truest opinions, you go into the sport. You talk to the people who actually do it every single day. And they'll give you a different understanding. Like, did you get that feeling from the other tennis pros, that they felt like you came with something special? Just in the way you struck the ball, the way you understood the ball, the way you played the game.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I got told a lot from other athletes and Roger and stuff, like, yeah, like, you know, past players were saying, like, oh, he's the most talented. And then I guess, I don't know when I kind of lost, not lost interest, but I just kind of just, I didn't take it that seriously. I never really fully bought in, I think, to the process of, like, tennis being, like, really, really important. Like, I still today sit here and I don't think it's that important. Like,
it's not number one on your list.
It's been a great vehicle for me to meet you, for instance, to meet all these beautiful people, all these cultures, and live this life. But I never really say, like, oh, like, I'm not going to introduce myself as, oh, I'm Nick Kyrgios, tennis player, I've done this and this. Like, I just never really thought it was that serious. And like, you look at Roger and Novak and Nadal, like, I'm not saying they're doing it wrong. Like, they've bought into the process and they've become, you know, champions and whatever. But I just think I'm just not that personality. Like, I love gaming. I love hanging out with my friends. I love feeling normal. I love going to get a coffee. Like, I love. And then if I'm playing some pro tennis on the side, that's great. But, like, it's like, I'm not willing to sacrifice these other things that make me really, really happy.
You know, it's funny. You didn't just play tennis in, like, one of the whitest sports. You also grew up in one of the whitest countries. Like, I've been to Australia a bunch doing shows. Yeah. I think Australia is one of the most fun countries I've ever been to.
It's amazing, yeah.
But, damn, Australia doesn't know how to talk about race or anything that is not, like, stock standard white Australian.
They're pretty racist down here. They are. You can just say it. Like, it's okay. You're just like working around me.
I'm not going to be that guy.
Yeah, but no, you were just,
I'm not
like going to
be that. I'm not going to go out there and just like, no. No, no. Hey, man, it's not my country to say that about.
It is very. You know? I'll tell you firsthand. I've dealt with it. It's fine. It's horrific down here.
Have you seen a change over the years?
I think it's getting worse. I think it's getting worse everywhere, to be honest. I don't know. The world frustrates me. The world frustrates me.
In what way?
Everyone's just trying to just split everyone up. Like, humans actually are capable of doing some good things when they work together, but no one wants to work together for some reason. Everyone's just putting each other down.
I agree with a lot of that.
Yeah, everyone's just trying to like separate everyone. It's either this or that. It's like, why can't people have different opinions and just respect that? And then, I don't know, it's so weird. I just try not to think about it because it drives me insane.
Do you think some of that came to you from growing up in a mixed family? Because for me, one of the main things I had to do growing up, so my dad's Swiss, my mom is Xhosa from South Africa. I grew up in South Africa, but I had to learn different languages, different accents, different cultures, different. So in my household, there was no like right way to do something. There were just different ways to do the thing to get to the right outcome. Does that make sense?
100%.
So I always grew up in a world where I was like, I mean, I think I'm right, but maybe you're right from your point of view. And 100%.
I think growing up with my household, most Aussies, like really Aussie families, they're not like super family orientated. And they're like, we're like me, like I speak to my parents pretty much every day. They send me videos when I'm traveling. Like I have to be around people who are really close to their family and like, I just can't, I don't know, like some of my friends, like, oh, I haven't spoken to my mom in like 3 weeks. I'm like, bro, I actually need to be away from you. Like, that's not normal. Anyway. Like, that's not normal.
Your mom seems like a really interesting woman. Like, first of all, I read, and you never know how much of this is true, I read that she's like a princess.
Yeah, she was part of the royal family in Malaysia, but I don't know what royalty it was because we were broke. I would have loved for it to be royal. I would have loved. But yeah, she was part of a royal family in Malaysia and she came to Australia. The story of how my mum met my dad was crazy because my dad came by boat from Greece when he was six. So like, just a crazy story. Like, I don't know. They both came from crazy backgrounds.
Yeah, I don't think I know many Malaysian Greek mixes.
Yeah, it's
to
just
be honest
odd.
With you.
Like my dad just came by boat. My mum basically, I don't know how my mum came. She probably swam. I don't know what kind of form of transport she had.
Yeah,
back then.
Right.
Yeah, wild. So I don't know.
Who's more of their culture? Your mom or your dad? Like, is your dad more Greek than your mom is Malaysian?
Oh no, they're both super like super in their roots. Like my dad's super Greek. Like meets every old Greek stereotype you've ever.
So what? Yeah. Wait. So what does he call? Does he call you Nikos? Does he call you what?
Nico. They call me Nick, but Nico. Yeah, Nico. But like he will. Like Greeks never play. Never old school Greeks never pay full price for anything. Like he'll bargain. We'll be like at a jewelry store or anything. He's like trying to bargain. I'm like, Dad, we can't do that here. My mom is like we got a lot of relatives from Malaysia and my dad's you know, Greek roots. But that's the cool thing about it. Like people can be successful from like anywhere. And any like from anywhere, literally, and it's cool. My roots are pretty special.
We're going to continue this conversation right after this short break. This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu. This episode is brought to you by CVS Health. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual. I remember watching you at a tennis tournament once, mm-hmm. and I was watching you play, and I was chatting to a friend of mine, and he was like, "Why do you think Nick doesn't like tennis?" And I remember there was a really cool interview that I saw once. It was a Tottenham Hotspur football player, right, in England. Yep. And he was, I think he was left back or right back at the time. And his name slips my mind. But I will never forget, they were interviewing him about the game. And he said, I don't watch football. Yep. I don't care about football. I don't have a favorite team. This is just what I do for a job. And yep. and the people were almost offended. They were like, "How can you say that? You play in the Premier League. This is amazing." Yep. And he said, "Hey, was your dad a fan of the company he worked for?" He's like, "Yeah, was your dad a fan of the job? Was your mom a fan of the place where she worked?" He's like, "It's my job. I get some people have it as a passion, but it's my job." And when we were watching you play, I said to my friend, just watching you and your vibe, I said, "I feel like Nick Kyrgios is a team player stuck in an individual sport." That's what I feel sometimes when I watch you.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up playing basketball. I much prefer team sports, team environments, big time. I love losing together and winning together and having that camaraderie and being on the road and all that. I much prefer it more than like, and people are like, "Yeah, but what about when you win?" I'm like, "Yeah, it feels good, but I prefer to just be with I don't know. I'm just a big team guy. I don't know what it is, but that's just me. Like, I can't.
Tennis players are really selfish. You even see it when you played in the doubles. I mean, it seemed like you had more fun playing doubles than you've ever had playing singles.
Yeah, big time. I love playing doubles. A bit less pressure, but at the same time, I just feel like it's more rewarding to do it with someone else. I love doubles, man. Doubles is a lot of fun.
Did you grow up with your siblings? How many siblings do you have?
Yeah, I got two older siblings. We grew up together. Yeah,
right. I sometimes wonder if it's that. You know, I talk to a lot of athletes, and especially athletes in the individual sports. The ones who grew up as only children almost didn't mind being in an individual sport because that was the only place they got to see other kids. And then people who grew up in homes where they had like a bustling family and siblings, they felt lonely when they went out on the road. Because tennis, I've heard, is one of the loneliest sports. I don't know if you'd agree.
Oh, it definitely is. Like, I mean, especially me being from Australia, early in my career, I was traveling like 6-7 months of the year.
Yeah.
Hotel to hotel, week in, week out, not seeing family and friends. It was hard. Yeah, definitely. Especially at that young. Like, it's a hard transition. And no sport's like that. Like, every sport kind of has a routine and you kind of know where you're going, where tennis is like you might lose and then you got to fly to the next place, or you might win, have to hang around and you're playing. You don't know what time you're playing. You don't know how long a match could go for. There's a lot of variables. That's why I think Novak is the best athlete in the world, because his ability to adapt is like no other. Like every one of the other athletes in the world like has no, like they know when they're going to start. They know when they're going to finish. They know how many games they're going to play. Where like Novak, like he's got to go to Asia, different time zone, different food, different diet. And then he got to Europe and then different food again, different time zone. Doesn't know when he's going to play. And then America and then Australia. And it's like, how does this guy adapt to every single scenario put in front of him and still come out the best is incredible.
Yeah, I actually never thought about the fact that in tennis, you don't know how long a match is.
Yeah, it could be one. It could be an hour and a half. It could be 5 hours. So it's like I've played matches that have gone under an hour. And then I played for 2 hours. I mean, and then I played for 5 hours nearly. And then it's like, and then I might have to travel across the world to play the same thing again with a different diet. It's crazy. Tennis is nuts. So like, that's why I think Novak for me, people don't really know that about tennis though. Like they don't, and the schedule, like you don't know when you're going to start playing. Like you're just
followed by it.
So like a match starts at 11 and then you're just followed by. So it's like, there's no direct time when you're going to start.
You don't actually know when you're going to start playing.
Half the time, more than half the time, you don't even know when you're going to start. So like you don't know when to eat. You don't know when to when you're going to finish. It's hard to plan. It's insane.
Yeah, this doesn't seem ideal. And it seems even less ideal if it's not your ultimate passion in life.
Yeah, exactly. It's stressful. Yeah. When you do stuff that I mean, it's definitely caused a lot of stress in my life. But again, I can understand that it's opened up a lot of doors for me as well.
Yeah, no, look, I think everything in life has a blessing and a curse attached to it. You know, I remember there was a time in stand-up comedy when as comedians, we would talk a lot about this backstage. Comedy, I would say before social media And in many moments, comedy was a really lonely, and it can be a very lonely, you know, profession in that we're on the road. When you start off, you're by yourself. You know, you've got a bag, you fly to some random place somewhere in the world. You do comedy there for a week and then you fly somewhere else. It's similar to tennis, just, you know, the crowds aren't the same. And there was a period where a lot of comedians were committing suicide. And we'd always hear these stories. You'd be like, yo, did you hear about Mike? What happened? And be like, yeah, Mike committed suicide in a hotel in some random place in the world. And it was always like the same sad story. On the road, by themselves. And then, you know, that was it. That was the last time we'd hear of that comedian. And we would talk about this and we say it's such a solitary experience. It's such a solitary existence. And at some point you go, what am I even doing this for? You know? And when obviously you've been very public about like the mental aspect of the game, and which I've appreciated, by the way, you know, yourself, Simone Biles, Naomi Osaka. It's like the first generation of superstar athletes who aren't afraid to say, hey, I put myself before the sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's important because I was close to, you know, I was in a very dark time and I was close to, you know, I was feeling the exact same way. I was like, what am I doing this for? Like, I hate, like, because I was two completely different people. I was like Nick Kyrgios and then I had to turn into someone else. And that was the only thing that people cared about was that Nick that I had to turn into, you know, and that entertainer. And then when I was normal, no one gave a shit. So I was like, this is tough. Like, I was like, I'm tired and I'm doing it week in, week out. And I was alone on the road. And I was like, drinking, drugs, partying, and then being out till like 5 a.m., then playing the next day. And it was just like, it was a big, dark depression that I was in. And no one, like, just because I was winning tennis matches, it seemed to just be okay. Everyone was like, okay, he's fine then. But I was like, that's what's dangerous is that people just will get up and continually go because they have to go, but they're really not okay. And then Naomi was the first kind of person that I was seeing taking time away from the sport. Like, she stepped away from the French Open. Everyone was like, oh, how could you? Like, it's a privilege to be there. I'm like, bro, she earned her right to be in the French Open. If she doesn't want to play for mental health, that's up to her. And then I saw that and that opened my eyes. I was like, holy shit, someone's actually doing it.
Wow.
And then, because I was going through that for ages before she did it. And then I told her, I was like, you helped me because I don't know, maybe if I kept going, like I wouldn't be here right now because that's how bad it was. And then I've just now completely shortened my schedule. I only play when I want to play. I only do what I want to do. And I was like, and then I end up doing things with more purpose anyway. Like this interview, like there was a time where I used to do this type of stuff and hate what I was doing. And I never even enjoyed doing things like this, but now I'm doing everything with a purpose and it ends up actually being more rewarding. So it's like, athletes doing that, and when I put it on social media, the best thing about it is people still reach out to me today when they're just like, oh, can I, you know, have some advice, and I get people's numbers and I talk to them on the phone and I WhatsApp. I don't even know these people, but I just help them, and it's like, that's the coolest thing about it, like just opening up. I mean, I'm helping so many people.
Did you have anyone that you leaned on either inside or outside of the sport when you were going through it? Because you're this young kid who blows up. The world is on your shoulders. You are considered a professional. I mean, before, you know, you're even an adult, really. Like, did you have anyone you leaned on? Was there anyone who really helped you through these tough times?
It was such a shock to the system, I think, for my family and my friends, because no one had ever done something like I'd done. Like, it was just not heard of that anyone around where I'm from, like, blew up globally and did something, and it was just hard. No, I didn't have anyone. They had no idea what I was going through. They had, you know, they was just like, oh, you're making good money, so that's it. It's just like, there was so much more stuff that came with it than that really affected me, because I was such a normal person. Like, I wasn't like, I hate the fame. I hate all that. I think it's a joke. And I hated it. And then I had no one to kind of lean on. And then I had some people, like even Andy Murray in the locker room was like, bro, are you okay? Like, I had some other people like kind of seeing like what I was going through, and then I seeked help and I just got myself out of it, to be honest. But I didn't really, and that was hard. That was really hard. I didn't feel, every time I tried to confide in someone that I knew, they had no idea what I was going through. So it was really hard.
When you were working with Naomi Osaka, you know, I saw a few clips of you guys going viral, you know, you and her talking about some aspects of the game.
Yep.
She's somebody who I feel like has a natural connection with you for multiple reasons. You know, you're both these professionals who came from worlds where you were mixed, where you almost always didn't fit in, but then found a place that you did fit in, but it wasn't necessarily your number one passion, but you're both amazingly good at it. When the two of you are together, like, what do you find Naomi brings out in you that you know, that maybe you haven't found when you connected with other players early on in your career?
Yeah, just that she's really struggled to fit in. I think the sport, like, I find comfort when I she was on my show as well.
Yeah.
And we had a really good chat, and just like, she had a lot of questions for me in that sense. She's like, how do you deal with it? Cause you know, you've had a lot of backlash. And I think we both just find that common ground in, like, we're so different in when we came into the sport, we were like the black sheep in, like, and we just really trying to find our way. And we had a sea of fans, but then we had a sea of people that didn't like the way we went about things. And it was like, she was like really, like, we both don't give enough credit to ourselves. I think, like, she's won 4 Grand Slams. She's beaten everyone. And I'm like, you do realize you've achieved a lot. She's like, I've achieved a little bit. And I'm like, we both really struggle to give ourselves credit.
And yeah.
I think we kind of find comfort in each other because it's like, we're almost, yeah, we're like, I feel like if I had a comparison on the women's tour, it would be her. You know, I haven't achieved anything of what she's achieved. You know, she's achieved 3 times as much, but it's like, I can see the way she looks uneasy at the courts. Like, I see her walking around, I'm like, she's just not in her environment. She's always walking with headphones on, trying to disassociate. And I'm just like, that's me. But like, she's just really, really internal. Her coping mechanism is to go in her shell, where mine is actually to just be crazy, where it's like, that's the only difference. But yeah, I've learned a lot from her as well, which is good.
Sometimes I think to myself, you know, when I watch athletes break into a sport, one of the things that plays through my head is the understanding of the sports culture versus that athlete's culture. You know, in England, for instance, a lot of people don't know that, like, footballers are considered like from the working class and lower class. It's not like a prestigious sport in the country. You know, rugby is up there, cricket's up there. That's considered, okay, that's the sport that the prince would play, for instance. And you see it change around the world. Tennis, from the time I was in school in South Africa, tennis was the sport that, like, the richer kids could play. Like, I remember seeing the price of a Wilson racket. Like, when I played tennis, I had one of those, the wooden, you know what I mean? Our school gave us those wooden ones with the long handle. That's all I could play with. And then, like, these kids would come to school and they'd have, like, their Wilsons, and they would have, like, all the kits and everything. There was no dream of affording that. So we couldn't continue playing tennis. But because of who's in the sport, there's also a cultural aspect that the sport dictates. And if you don't follow that culture, you're seen as being, you know, a bad boy, a rowdy person. Like, half of the things people criticize you for, I sometimes go, you realize if Nick was playing another sport, this would just be an athlete. That's what people would say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I've had conversations, like, if I played NFL, NBA, like, I'd probably be the cleanest and nicest guy in the locker room.
Yeah, like, they'd be like, quiet Nick. That's what they'd say.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because that's how I am. I'm actually very internal, and I'm an introvert when I'm off the court. Like, I don't like doing too much and saying too much. So it's like, you nailed it on the head. Like, the things I'm doing, like throwing a racket, or like a snippet of throwing a racket. So, but the thing about it is, like, I play for 4 hours and they choose to show a clip that goes for like 5 seconds and then broadcast it over the biggest media platforms in the world. And then obviously that's how you're going to brainwash the majority of people that haven't watched the 4-hour match, but they've watched the 5-second clip. Oh, how could you do this every day? It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, and that becomes a narrative, and that just grows legs. And then it's like, oh, he does it all. It's like, bro, you guys don't know who I am at all. And it's like, yeah, tennis is a white privileged sport. That's how it was when I was like the first. I guess there was a couple in the sport before me, but there wasn't many. And now there's so many. There's Tiafo, Osaka, Shelton, Kyrgios. Like, it's amazing. And it's like, I don't feel as alone and as alienated anymore as I did when I came up, because I was like, I walked in the locker room. I was like, bro, there is no one here that I fuck with at all. I was like, what is this place? It was cold. No one talked with each other. There was no like friendships. I was like, this is brutal. And then now it's like, I walk in there and you see people on the court, like, they've got passion, they've got personality, their culture, they're bringing different sides of the sport. Now we embrace it. And I'm like, dude, when I came through, I was like, you guys painted me as if I was like a murderer. Like, that's how bad it was. Like, there were some articles that I was like, all I'm doing is just being me and bringing my personality to sport. And I'm getting absolutely, and it's kind of given me a sour taste of tennis, to be honest. Like, I don't think about tennis in a good way. I think it's a, are very shallow and they haven't embraced personalities. And it's dangerous because some people like me, like, it was hurtful and I did struggle with it. So, and I know in other sports like NBA or, you know, rugby or soccer, like, there's so many different personalities.
Yeah.
And everyone's kind of, it's like, that's how it should be. Like, it's just like, we're so past, like, just, tennis is, I hate it. Like, honestly.
you know, I understand why you hate it, but in a selfish way, as a fan of the sport, I am grateful for you. I hate that you went through those experiences, but in a selfish way, I'm grateful for you because I don't think tennis realized how much it needs Nick Kyrgios. I don't think tennis realized how much it needs to be unpredictable, how much it needs to be personality, how much it needs to be like, you know, when you look at the, you know, the tennis stadiums themselves, you go from country to country. I've only watched a Grand Slam in New York, and I've watched one in Paris, or Roland Garros. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think if I've done one more, maybe, I'm not sure. But all of the stadiums have different personalities. And the commentators and the tennis world celebrate that. They go, oh, Roland Garros, this is the attitude. Yep. And, oh, yep. Wimbledon is very posh. And New York is very, like, lively and fun.
And then as soon as you get a different one on court, it's like, oh, why are you acting like that? It's
exactly. Like, well, and I never understood why they didn't celebrate that as a concept. I look at how John McEnroe brought people into the sport because of how crazy he was.
Yep. Yeah, he was nuts. And then, yeah, he got... I mean, I feel like, I mean, then he retired and now he's an absolute legend. It's like, oh, you should have embraced him while he was here type thing. But I feel like that's for me. I feel like now I'm getting more embraced when I'm getting to like the later stages of my career. And it's like,
yeah,
would have helped if I got embraced earlier on because I probably wouldn't have obviously had those dark periods in time.
Right,
I probably would have been in better physical condition. I probably would have adored the sport more and tried a little bit harder to get the best out of myself. But now, I mean, like I look back at it and it just caused so much dark and negative and stress and on me, my family, like, just,
yeah,
it just wasn't a nice, I don't look back at it as a nice period of my life. And I think people always ask me like, oh, how long do you want to play for? I was like, oh, I'll probably play for another year or two. And they're like, oh, why not? I'm just like, because I don't look back at it and smile. I look back at it and I'm like, it makes me almost sad and upset of my career. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that it is what it is. Like, I can't change it, but it's not what you want to hear from an athlete that's dedicated his whole life towards.
Do you ever think of you? I know this is going to sound crazy. You should do like a party year before you leave.
A what?
Just have like a party year, like a party, like bring all your friends. Just make it as much of a party as you can before. Like, don't leave.
All my friends can't travel like all the time. They go,
man. Let me tell you something. Once you announce it as like the retirement year,
people will be a part of it. You reckon?
Yeah, they gotta make it a thing. Find a sponsor. Get the sponsor to pay for like their salary for like a year. Yeah, make it like a reality show.
That'd be sick.
Go out there, like go out with a bang. Like I feel like why let the sport leave you? You know what I mean? You leave the sport the way you want to leave it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good. That's actually a pretty mental idea.
Can I tell you the most fun I ever had? Like some of the most depressing, quiet moments in my life have been, and not good quiet, have been on the road doing comedy, like a slog, exactly what you're saying. Yeah. I'll be in some random rainy town in England. This was years ago in my career. It's just me in like a hotel room that's underground. Cause you know, some hotels, they have that somehow. I don't know. The first floor is like under the surface of the street.
I don't know how that works.
You know what I mean? And dude, and I would be so just like depressed and tired and all of it. And the one thing I do now for myself is I go, I will make my environment the biggest community possible. So if you see me on tour in India, if you see me anywhere, I'm like, yo, man, I roll with my people. I go, the tour is almost secondary to me living my life with my people. And it's changed everything. Even the worst tour becomes the best tour.
I think that's what I did last year. Like, that was the best year of my life. And I kind of looked at it in a different light. I was like, okay, I'm going to look at it as like, I'm going on a holiday with my partner and my team. And then I'm playing a bit of tennis. And then I had the best year of my life. So maybe you're right. Maybe you're onto something there.
Yeah, man. I don't know. Because here's the thing, and you'll tell me if I'm wrong. It feels like you think of retiring as a moving, it doesn't feel like a constant measure. You know, when other athletes speak of retiring, so when Roger would speak about retiring, I remember him, he would always talk about his body and it was the end. I could see Roger talking about that. They would have a timeline. And I think COVID robbed him of a few years that we could have celebrated with him.
Yeah.
But like, when I look at you, I can see there's a lot of it that's like, it's not Nick's body. It feels like it's Nick's mind and Nick's heart that wants to take a break and get out of it, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. Like, my body now is obviously, you know, I've had a couple surgeries by 28 and like, I never really wanted to get to a point in my career where I did that because I wanted a family one day and be active and play with them and run around.
Right.
But yeah, it's more so I'm just a bit like, yeah, I guess just, I don't know, there's a bit of tennis that stings every time I think about it, and that's not, it's like I don't, yeah. I mean, look, I'll come back and when I'm healthy and I'll play and I'll entertain for another year or two, but after that, I think that's it.
Let's go back to, you know, when you were saying you were painted as this bad boy, I would love to know, how do you feel about the title bad boy? Do you like it? Because from the outside, sometimes people, no, you don't.
No, I don't like it because it's like a reputation that I've had to kind of like fight against my entire life. Just like every time I meet a person or go out in public or, you know, for instance, my partner, when I met her, she thought I was arrogant. She thought I was maniacal. She thought I was like volatile. She thought I was like, yeah, just like a bad person. And I was like, I've just been fighting against this reputation my entire life. And I'm actually the exact opposite. Like, I don't take myself seriously at all. I'm literally the calmest person you've ever met.
Yeah.
I'm very low maintenance. Like, I'm selfless. I'm not selfish at all. Like every tennis player is. Like, I'm like, and it's been hard. Like, people don't even hear me out. And it's just like, I hate it because it's like, it's been tough. Definitely. But unfortunately, that's really the only Nick that they care about. So it's like, it's hard.
I don't know if you still do this, but I remember hearing once that you coached yourself. Was that true?
Yeah, I haven't had a coach for like 6-7 years now.
Well, was part of that because you didn't want to be coached out of being yourself, or was it just because you don't work well with a coach?
I guess I just think that my way is the best. And no one knows me as well as I do. Like, I'll hold myself accountable when I do something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows my game the way I know my game. I know what I need to improve on. I know what my strengths are. But also, it's just a waste of money, in my opinion. And like, these coaches are like charging like 150 to 200 grand a year. I'm like, for what? Like, you stand there and like I do my own study. Like, I can just go to YouTube right now and look at every single player's strengths and weaknesses, study their game, watch hours of film and do all that side of things tactically. I know what my technique's absolutely fine. I can, like, I'm not going to pay someone 200 grand to just travel the world and just stand on court with me and just like, oh, you do this. Okay, that's 200 grand worth of advice. Like,
yeah, amazing. Yeah, yeah.
Like, hell no. Like, what the that's ridiculous.
Yeah, you see this, but this is even crazier to me. The fact that you win anything is even is even wilder to me now. Because I'm just like, you're an anomaly. People talk about a natural talent, but you are truly an anomaly. You can't play at the highest level of any sport without a coach and do what you do. You can. You think so?
It's real. It's simple. Like, the biggest lie we've all been told, it's not that simple. It really is. It's very simple.
I feel like this is Superman lifting a bus, being like, it's not that hard. It's really not that hard. You just got to lift with your knees. You just got to lift with your legs.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
When Nick Kyrgios looks at his life apart from the game, I know, are you still dealing with an injury now?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. When you get these injuries, do you actually know when you're coming back, or is it all just speculation?
It just depends what kind of injury it is, obviously. Like, if it's a rolled ankle, you know, I've had some surgeries and I'm just trying to get back. I had a bit of a wrist thing and it was kind of bothering my everyday life. Like, I couldn't go to the bathroom. I couldn't put salt on my steak. Like, it was getting to a point where I was like, okay, it was affecting my everyday life. And it wasn't even about tennis. People were like, oh, how are you on the court? I was like, dude, it wasn't even on the court. Like, I was like struggling to be without pain in my day life. So I had to get it done.
Damn.
And now I don't really have like a timeline. You know, I'm just going to come back. I feel like I've got so much stuff that I can focus on in the meantime that it's just like, I'm going to do this right, take my time, come back whenever I want. I got a protected ranking of 21, so I can come back and play whatever I want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Like, I'm going to enjoy my life in the meantime. Like, and enjoy it, do my rehab, and that's it. Like, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you probably if I was healthy at the moment. I'd be probably
training.
Yeah, but I'd be in a bad mood. I would be training and I'd be miserable. And then I'd be like, no, I'm not doing this call. Like, and now, do you know what I mean? So it's like, there's positives to everything.
Yeah, I really wonder how long it's going to take for us to get to the place where we acknowledge that athletes are human beings and we don't own them in their entirety outside of the sport. Because we're watching you perform the sport, you know, like that is the action. And there's this pervasive idea that athletes are owned off the court or off the field.
Like, should like be people, doing this? This
yeah, you, we want you. We want you doing. We want you. 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 And then as soon as you express emotion about being wanted, people are angry at you. They're like, "Oh, what do you mean he's tired? What do you mean he's not having a good day?"
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, it's yeah. You said it.
Let's talk about a bit of like just something like your personal life, like as Nick, you've been really open and really vulnerable, which for me flies in the face of this idea of you being an asshole. You know, you to me, it seems like you are somebody who occasionally loses their temper or shows their emotion while playing a sport, which, by the way, again, is normal in most sports. But when you're forced to wear white shorts. Yeah. It is
like we're human, so aren't we supposed to feel? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hope that will change in tennis, man. I really hope it will, because I think if the sport's not careful, it will start to become a vestige of itself. It'll just become like this, you know. Remember when like the Williams sisters?
As soon as Nadal and Djokovic goes anyway, the sport's going to struggle. They'll lose so many fans. I think. Look, obviously with Sinner and Alcaraz coming up, but the way they've marketed the sport, there's not going to be as much interest anymore.
Yeah, you see, and that's what I mean. They can't afford to lose people like you. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, too bad. I've got plans.
What are your plans? For much longer. If you could wave a magic wand, what does Nick Kyrgios do?
I actually don't have plans. That's a lie. I don't. No? I'm not a planner. I just go day by day. I look back at. No, I just go back. I don't even know what I'm doing tomorrow. I don't even know what I'm doing this afternoon. Honestly, I don't have. I'm not a planner at all.
But what would you want to do? If you could do anything.
I honestly don't even want to think about it. Like, I find happiness in the easiest of things. Like, I just was so excited to just get up and be at home, like, get a coffee, spend time with my mum. Like, those things are just, like, the best things. I just want to do that for as long as I can.
I think you know, with all the downsides, as we talk about, of the sport of tennis, I wonder if you have felt, because I could just be projecting this incorrectly, but obviously there are downsides to social media. Did you start to find a level of connection with people because of social media? Like, did you start to realize that Nick Kyrgios was touching hearts and minds all over the world in a way that you weren't aware of when you started playing?
Definitely. And I think that's what I'm doing now. Like, I've actually, funny you said it, like, I'm starting my show called Good Trouble. I sit down one-on-one with some really interesting people. Like, I've done Mike Tyson, Gordon Ramsay, Gary Vee, Jay Shetty, and you know, they're all getting edited now, but I was filming that when I was in LA, and it's like we sit down intimately, and I didn't realize that I would be able to interview these people, first of all.
Right, right.
And social media was the biggest link of that. And then obviously tennis, if I wasn't good at tennis, I wouldn't have even had the, you know, the platform to do it. But like, I've sat down with these people, these amazing entrepreneurs, athletes, chefs, like, and I'm like,
yeah,
they all seem to have like the same sort of, they're like, they do things with purpose. They've come from a super, like, super hard background. They've like, they're never satisfied, like, ever. Mm-hmm. They're always like, all right, I achieve something, I got to do more. And I'm like, when I speak to these people, I'm like, I sit there and I'm like, I did Rainn Wilson, by the way. And we chatted about like the comedy scene and people, you know, there was a lot of suicides. So when you were saying that, yeah, I was like, yeah. I was pretty fresh in my mind. But like, I was just like, how the hell is Nick Kyrgios sitting down here interviewing these people? And I'm like, my life with the social media and stuff, like I hated it, but then I'm like, dude, there's so many cool things that come from it. Like even this, for instance, like it's pretty powerful stuff, but I think you got to use it in the right way. Definitely. Cause there's a lot of junk on it as well.
It's interesting. You've said it twice and it says something to who you are, but like the fact that you say, how is Nick Kyrgios in this situation? How is Nick Kyrgios speaking to that? Do you ever acknowledge the fact that like people are thinking that about you?
No.
You know? Yeah, yeah, it's funny that you don't ever think that about yourself at all.
No. No. I just think it's weird that people want to talk to me. It's very weird. It's fucking weird.
Don't go anywhere, because we got more What Now after this. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you're just starting or managing a growing brand, let's be honest, having a good website is incredibly important. And look, I love tech just as much as the next guy, but if you're like me, the thought of making a website from scratch, well, it can be pretty daunting. Well, that is, unless you have all the right tools, like search engine optimization features. Because what's the point of making a website if nobody can find it. Or things like built-in templates so you don't have to start from scratch, and seamless payment methods ready for your customers. Now that's starting to sound like fun. Well, all you have to do is head to squarespace.com for a free trial and save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain by using the code Trevor. When you're playing, this is something I've always wanted to know, just as a selfish, you know, for me, completely selfishly. How much does it affect you when, like, the fans or the people in the crowd are, like, talking or not talking?
So annoying.
Or, like, do you... Really?
So, look, it's the timing of it. Like, yeah. If you want to come to a tennis game and cheer and be loud, like, New York is so loud. In Arthur Ashe Arena, it's so loud. But, like, yeah. For instance, at Wimbledon or, like, at Oz Open or... And then when or moments where you have to be quiet, like it's like between first or second serves or like in the middle of the point, like you can't. People, I think they just don't realize that like a little, especially in tennis, like one point can change the whole momentum of the match. Like the scoring system isn't like a basketball game or a soccer game. Mm-hmm, like soccer's not a good example, but a soccer game, like you have to, I think people just, you know, they might be drinking too much or whatever, but they kind of don't understand that. Right. There's a little bit of etiquette in tennis where it's like you have to just be quiet at certain moments, not all the time, but certain moments. And I think people just struggle with that sometimes,
Because it can swing the entire game.
It can.
Whenever you're doing those trick shots,
yeah.
which, you know, I think you've become even more famous for thanks to social media, you know, TikTok and you name it. Like in those moments, I mean, I don't need to tell you this, but I will anyway. As a fan of the sport, I genuinely live for that moment, Nick.
Yeah.
I don't care whether it works or not.
Yeah,
I live for that moment.
Me too.
Because
me too.
It feels unscripted, it feels original. Like when you're hitting those crazy trick shots to a fellow pro and you see them smiling and everything, like is that a moment where Nick's having fun on the court?
Yeah, it's just like that's like a part that I look back on. I'm like those were cool moments because it's just like my personality coming through. And I think when I see the youth kind of, you know, going and doing that in their like small tennis center and they're trying to aspire to be like me. That's a real cool part about it. Like that's a bit of my personality where it's like, you know, show yourself what you want, what you like, how you want to play in those moments. It's pretty cool.
Would you ever go into coaching?
I would. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's asked for a couple tips and a couple things and I've helped her and a lot of players do. I think I'm a student of the game where like I'm really smart tactically and I feel like I can help a lot of players. So yeah, probably, maybe.
What would you do differently as a coach to what all the quote unquote, let's just call them mainstream coaches are doing?
What do you think
coaches miss?
I think most coaches miss like actually caring for the athlete and their well-being first. I think they care about the tennis first, most of them, and they don't really care about, okay, how's my player's life actually going? How, like, I would have to spend time with my student, I guess. I'd have to know what their tendencies are, what they like to do, how their personality is off the court. You know, I need to know how they, like, just I need to get to know them and care about them first, have that connection, make sure that's solid before I actually, because how are they going to listen to me, first of all? If I don't care about them as like, and I gain that respect, they're not going to listen to me on the court. And I feel like that was something that I struggled with. Like I knew early in my career, people didn't really care about my well-being. Like I was paying them and they never hung out and they never really got to know me. And I was like, okay, so now they're showing up on the tennis court. I'm like, I can't do that. I can't do those relationships. So I guess I would just be there. Like I'd be early mornings with them, late nights, you know, go through the ups and downs and get to know them as a person. And yeah, that would be the difference, I think.
I remember players at Inter Milan talking about Jose Mourinho.
Yep.
And a lot of the players were saying, one of the reasons they regard him as one of the greatest coaches of all time is not because of what he does on the field. It's what he does off the field. They said he involves himself in every aspect of your life, like a real human being. He's like, how is your wife? How's your family? How are the kids? What's
it's
going
the
on?
Most important.
Sometimes he would even let a player not play the game because he's like, hey, I get back home. You're struggling with a lot. And I often think about that with sport, you know, like, are we doing a good job treating athletes like the human beings that they are, especially thinking about like the mental aspects of the game? Like, I don't know if you've ever read Zlatan Ibrahimovic's book, but in the book, he talks about, it's a really, really fantastic book. I'd recommend it if you haven't. He he talks about how before one of the biggest matches of his career, he was dealing with the fact that him and his wife had lost like a child, like, you know, like, and it was a painful, painful story of him talking about his wife was pregnant and then he has to go and play in a final and that's it. And all the fans care about is, did you score? Did you not score? You're dealing with this private thing that nobody knows about, you know, no one gets to talk about it. I'd love to know, like, did you ever get therapy? Did anyone ever recommend it? Was it something that you were exposed to?
I've seen a lot of psychologists and I went to this like kind of this psychological kind of rehab place in London. You know, I was playing 2019 Wimbledon. I went there and I got, you know, I went there, I seeked a bit of help and it was kind of like a scary time because I had to play Nadal the next day and they were like, you should stay here for like a week or two. And I was like, I can't really do that because I got to play Nadal the next day. And that was when it was a big wake up call for me. I was like, shit, I need to kind of drive myself out of this period because no matter what I do, people are really not going to care about things I've got off, you know, off the court.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like my grandmother, she passed away this year and she was like, she was quite old. She lived a great life. She was like 94, I think, or 95. And that day, you know, I was training and she'd passed away and I was in Sydney and she was in Canberra and my family were FaceTiming me and I was FaceTiming her. And I was on the camera to her watching her kind of, you know, go through that phase.
Oh, wow.
And then it's like, then I'm at a tennis center training and people come up to photos and like, that was like, that's the kind of thing that people just don't get. Like it was my girlfriend's birthday as well. So it was my girlfriend's birthday. Like, my grandmother passed away and I was training and people just come up with photos and it's like that sort of stuff takes so much of a toll on someone. It's like, sorry that I might be miserable the next day. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like,
right.
The people don't get that. They're like, oh, how arrogant of you not to take a photo. I'm like, dude, like I just like 5 minutes ago, my grandma just passed. Do you know what I mean? Like they don't care about that.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. My grandpa passed away last year. Same thing. It's the same. Like, and you don't want to, nor should you have to deal with it with strangers. Like, you don't want to tell everyone, oh, my grandmother just died.
Exactly. But then if you don't take a photo, it's like, oh, well, why are you so rude? I'm like, dude, all right, do you want to know? And then they, like, it's crazy, man.
Yeah. Like, it's hard. It's that line. They only miss you when you're gone. It's that feeling.
Of course.
One aspect I definitely want to touch on before I let you go is your relationship. You've been really open and it seems like you give a lot of credit to your partner for how she's helped you in your life. You've talked about her getting you out of the darkest moments, how she sees you when other people don't. I remember watching her at Arthur Ashe, if I'm not mistaken. It was like, and like seeing how she sort of felt for you in some of the moments on the game. Yeah. Sometimes it even felt like you were just playing in front of her. It wasn't even about the rest of us. What has that relationship meant to you? And how easy is it to be in a relationship when you're in the position that you're in?
Oh, I mean, first of all, being in a relationship in anyone that's kind of in the limelight, it's not easy at all. Like it's really hard. You know, there's a lot of eyes on your relationship. There's a lot of people that have their opinions and on social media, they're commenting this or that, like a lot of garbage that gets kind of fueled into it. And then like, obviously, you know, following and liking and all this. And, you know, I think the best thing about my relationship is that we have really nice, really, really good boundaries and we both respect it. And we know that trust is really the only currency you have in a relationship. And once you break it, I think it's really hard to, especially in the limelight, once it's a little bit broken, it's really too hard to fix, but she's just present. Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing that I say about my girlfriend now. She's just present and she knows the whirlwind of my life. Like when I travel and when I'm in the spotlight and when I'm dealing with negativity or positivity and I'm winning and I'm stressed, like she's just there. Like I play on the biggest stadiums in the world and I get back to the little hallway and she's just waiting there and she's like, yeah, you did really well. And it's like, she just sits there and she's just like, I'm proud of you. And, you know, we go home and we'll make food together. It's just like, I love just the simplest of things. Like I don't need anything. It's like, just be present for me because like in the whirlwind of my life and the shitstorm, I just want to come home to a nice, calm environment where we can talk and just relax. And I don't want to talk about tennis. Just like, what are you doing today? Or what are we doing? I just love that. And
yeah,
I think that's
who are you as a human being?
Like, I know it's not easy. Like I'm not easy to be with. Like there's a lot of shit that comes with me and I've got a lot of baggage and I've got a lot of spotlight and people don't like, I know not everyone wants that. It's not fun all the time. And I think my girlfriend now, she's just really, partner, she's just present. She just rides the waves, like, and she's really good to travel with. That is the biggest thing. And that's how you know if she's the one or not. If you can travel with your partner and not lose your shit at them with like delayed flights or shitty hotels. Right? If you can travel with your partner, then she's the one.
Yeah. It goes both ways. I always tell people, I say, if you want to know where you really are in a relationship, travel alone with someone, no matter who it is, you will expose yourself. Because that's you, like, when you wake up together, go to bed together, deal with the hotel together, the, you know, like you said, the flight's delayed, there's a problem with the seats.
Yeah, everything.
You will know who the other person
adversity,
is.
Adversity,
What does she think of your OnlyFans? Like, because you have an OnlyFans. I saw this and I was like, Nick, what the hell is this? And then I was like, okay, it's funny because OnlyFans started off as this idea where you could just share insider insights. Now people think of OnlyFans as only being porn. When I saw Nick Kyrgios is on OnlyFans, I was like, what?
Yeah, what did you think? You were going to see my extra bit of equipment? Obviously not.
I thought I was going to see your tennis balls, like, Nick. That's what I thought, man.
Yeah, baby. That's a lot of people want to see. But it's like, it's crazy, you know? And it's like, I'm just giving insights of like my training regimes, like my rehab, my dog, like normal life stuff that people love to see. It's like, oh, I'm doing, you know, I'm going to behind the scenes of Good Trouble, my show, or like, you know, like just tennis stuff. And it's like, I think in a way, look, I think some part of OnlyFans, obviously very, very insane. Like I would never, ever do anything like, obviously I'm not going to go out there, take my shirt off and shit and do like, that's not happening. But at the same time, like I think, look, there's a way to, I've got so many fans that are willing to, you know, see my stuff and my stuff. Not that stuff, but
not your stuff. Not your stuff, but your stuff.
And I think it's cool. But the cool thing about it is that every media platform now that wants to see what I'm up to has to subscribe to my OnlyFans. So I did my, I do big announcements on my Instagram. I'm like, make sure you go to my Instagram. Hilarious. And then all these media platforms are subscribing to my OnlyFans and then they got to go and see what I'm doing. So it's like, I'm just stealing their money.
Oh, man.
Like, I don't know. Yeah. So the tennis world now has to sub to my OnlyFans to be like, oh, that's what he's doing. Oh shit, we have to sign up now
they know what's happening. It's like paying the tabloid to follow you for a change.
Exactly. It's payback.
That's actually a great idea.
You're gonna start doing it now, aren't you?
I'm not mad at this idea. Actually, would you ever do would you ever stream gaming as well?
Yeah. That's what I mean. I was streaming. I'm playing some games like Logan Paul and stuff, and I'm gonna stream them on OnlyFans stuff. Like it's cool. And I think I'm actually helping the platform a bit, gain some more, athletes. I think it's cool. I would actually subscribe to, if like Jason Tatum or Boston Celtics had OnlyFans, I would subscribe, like to get inside the locker room and see like dope like huddles before they go out. 100%. Uh-huh, you kidding me? Definitely I would.
Get inside the game and into the human being. Well, you know what? I'll tell you as one of your fans. Yeah, man, I appreciate who you are as a person. I appreciate how flawed you've been in public. I appreciate the fact that you've survived through it all. I know it's not easy. I can't imagine what it's like, you know, at the age that you were doing it and under the microscope that you're constantly under. But I appreciate that you try, that you grow, that you talk about your mental health, that you do it all, and that you're a great guy. For real, man.
I really appreciate it.
It's great to meet your heroes, and they're as fantastic as you are, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so
I really
keep
do
doing it.
That.
And I promise you now, just do me one favor. I promise you now. This is what the promise I made to myself, Nick. I always go, if the world is ending, you've got to figure out what kind of party you're throwing for it. And I think of that
in
your career as well.
I would just
sit in
front of my PC and play.
Yeah,
play.
But I'm thinking the same thing for you, man. When you're on the road, when it's that final goodbye, please, I promise you I'm not wrong on this. Make it a party, man. Make it the biggest goodbye, the most fun. Bring your people. Make it raucous. Leave your stamp on the sport. Don't let the sport leave its stamp on you.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
All right, bro.
Thank you again, Nick.
Take it easy.
Appreciate you.
Same, man.
All right, cool.
Bye.
What Now with Trevor Noah is produced by Spotify Studios in partnership with Day Zero Productions, Full Well 73, and Odyssey's Pineapple Street Studios. The show is executive produced by Trevor Noah, Ben Winston, Jenna Weiss-Berman, and Barry Finkel. Produced by Emmanuel Hapsis and Marina Henke. Music, mixing, and mastering by Hannes Brown. Thank you so much for listening. Join me next Thursday for another episode of What Now?